The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talk the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
What I really want to hammer home today is this game of Arkansas and LSU. I know it's not a rivalry by all official definitions of a rivalry. It's not. But there is no doubt that these teams have had some great games in their history. Games that have been close, games that have meant a lot. And even in the blowout games, had a lot of hype going into it. For instance, in 2011, when Arkansas was number 3 and LSU was number 1. LSU blew out Arkansas, but still had a lot of hype going into it and a lot of indication on what was going on.
Wasn't that the game they played following Garrett Ekman's death
That's
as
right.
well?
Yeah.
I mean, there was some, they came out, scored early. It was kind of tight early, but then it ended up being...
It's 14-0 to start, and then they ended up outscoring Arkansas the rest of the way, 41-3. So 41-17 ended up being the final score there.
That was the week where what, LSU was 1, Bama was 2, Arkansas was 3.
Mm-hmm.
So the SEC West had 1-2-3 in the country. But Arkansas was certainly outmatched that day.
And that was during the time of the BCS bowl game still going on. So, I mean, just the fact that you had something like that. I mean, that was what was so impressive at the time because it was unheard of to have the top three teams, especially in the final week of the regular season, to all be ranked 1, 2, and 3. It seems like it was just so long ago, especially for Razorback fans. But my point is that if you remember back to some of the greatest games in Arkansas football history, at least in the modern era of Arkansas football, most of the time it'll go back to LSU. In fact, I'm sure a lot of you who maybe watch a bunch of YouTube highlight videos, there's a guy named War Machine that puts up a lot of old Razorback highlight videos, and he's doing the Lord's work with this.
Most of them are old.
And that's what's so great. That's what's so great about it is that you're able to watch a lot of these, and he goes back all the way to the 60s in some of the highlights he has. But if you look at the most watched highlights that he has on his YouTube channel, the top 6 out of the top 7 are LSU games. So there's just something about this matchup and something about this series that Razorback fans care a lot about that has made for some really great games, some really meaningful games. But it's just funny because by saying that, you would feel like, okay, this must be a rivalry game, but it's not. It's just something that they have where they have had so many great moments, great memories, and great games.
I'll tell you what's added to it from a fan perspective as far as being around other fans from the other side of the equation, if you will. You know, that's one thing Arkansas has not ever really had a lot of is, you know, like the Bedlam game. OU, OSU. Well, those folks live next door to each other in a lot of cases, in mass. Well, in Arkansas, we hadn't had a whole lot of that. But after Katrina in, what was that, 05?
Yeah.
A lot of folks moved from Louisiana to Arkansas and realized how wonderful our state is, that the natural state's pretty awesome. And they moved to Arkansas, but they're still LSU fans. That's not a huge thing, but that is something because I seem to know more people that are LSU fans living in Arkansas since then than in any other time. Y'all ever notice that?
Yeah.
I know Ty's too young for that kind of stuff, but
yeah.
Well, Hurricane Katrina. Well, I'm too young for that.
Well, yeah. But as
you were what, third grade?
I mean, I still
yeah, exactly.
I still can remember that.
Well,
and I still can remember the flight over.
Well, no, that was way back when. Remember, that was like 05.
Pretty good memory.
You know, 05. You were still popping pimples.
Hey, if it was before Facebook.
Still pop them now.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there are
a long time ago. Yeah,
a lot of
people from that. Yeah,
people from Louisiana that found new homes in Arkansas as a result of that.
So that
makes for a little back and forth that I think makes any rivalry great, and that's one thing that Arkansas doesn't get enough of a taste of.
Yeah, well, I remember in Hurricane Katrina because it was my sophomore year of high school, and I remember we had a lot of refugees from it coming to Fayetteville High School, and I remember a few of them were wearing LSU gear, and it was almost like, whoa, hold on a second.
Check your hat and sweatshirt at the border, please.
Like, listen, you can't be doing this type of thing. That's how fights get started. But, yeah, and I think that's a big factor into it as well. And I believe that the timing of the game, and I know we brought this up, but the timing of the game and how it was usually at the end of the season, and that's always when more is on the line because then you know how it's all set up. You know what you're playing for at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some cases, it was the SEC West title, which happened in 02. And that was a big deal for Arkansas. And, of course, happened some other years where LSU got the victory. But it was a big deal then. In 2010, the winner went to the Sugar Bowl. I mean, that was what you knew, what was on the line going into that game.
Look at 06. Arkansas had already wrapped up their appearance in Atlanta. Yeah. But then LSU comes into Little Rock, and I can still see that Trendon Holliday
right after the 80-yard
squeaking down the sideline.
Right after the 80-yard run by McFadden.
Right. And Peyton Hillis, nowhere to be found, you know, needed him that day. You know, I still remember that. But they came in and kind of rained on your parade.
Yeah, because you had won 10 straight games. Mm-hmm. You were number 5 in the country, and you had felt like if you had gone undefeated. Because just think about it, Arkansas was 5 points away, because the final score is 31-26, 5 points away from going 8-0 in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
8-0, and that's just almost unheard of now.
You win that game, maybe you have the confidence to go actually beat Florida. You do those two things, you probably play for the national championship.
I don't think there's any probably, but I think you do.
Yeah.
I mean, because that would mean your final wins were against LSU and Florida. Mm-hmm.
And undefeated in the SEC, and you're an undefeated SEC champion.
That's right. So, and, you know, there's a lot of things that could have happened. But
LSU spoiled that.
Yeah.
To a degree. Now, Arkansas went on the next week, and we all know about the Reggie Fish play.
But they lost three, and then they lost to Brett Bielema. Gross. In the bowl game. Against Wisconsin. But, yeah, so even that game that a lot of people just forget about because it didn't have any impact as far as Arkansas seeding in the SEC West because they had already won the SEC West before that game. But LSU comes in and spoils that a little bit.
But this idea, we have this conversation, and I think we like to romanticize this rivalry a little more than that. For all these close games, there's still plenty of games like we were talking about where there's been some blowouts, even with good teams. You know, 41-7, and I think three or more touchdowns. There's been plenty of those too in recent times. So it's not like every game's been close and every game's had meaning.
No, not every game, because there has been some blowouts, mm-hmm. and look at the past 2 years.
And Arkansas handed out one or two of them.
Yeah, just not as frequently, not as recently, but you know, just the past 2 years, for instance. You know, Arkansas has really not done well in those games. In fact, Eddie O has done a lot better job against Arkansas than you could say Les Miles did a lot of times. Because also Arkansas has not had two good teams in the past 2 years, mm-hmm. but that's neither here nor there. But still, it's a different deal now where you're seeing here, it's not Les Miles, it's not Bobby Petrino or Brett Bielema. You're now seeing Chad Morris versus Ed Orgeron, where, of course, Chad Morris in his first year, Ed Orgeron still relatively new to LSU, and I know that he has two losses on his schedule already, lost to Bama and lost to Florida. But there's no shame in that, and it's just a matter of how is he going to approach this game, and could this weekend be setting up for another weird, wacky game in this Arkansas-LSU series?
Mm-hmm.
Because, listen, I don't think Arkansas will win. I think the talent gap is so wide between these two teams, that doesn't matter if Arkansas played good and LSU played bad. I still feel like LSU would win because they're that good. However, I never know what to expect in this game because there's been times where Arkansas has beaten LSU Arkansas had no business beating LSU. Zero. But for whatever reason, they found ways. And we're going to talk with Matt Moscone a little more about it. Has it been because LSU doesn't take the game as seriously as Arkansas does? Not to say they don't take it seriously, but maybe not as seriously as Arkansas does. Is it just because it's a rivalry to one team but not the other? Is it just bad matchups? Is it the Alabama factor and the hangover afterwards? I mean, there's a lot of different things that could be going into the reasons of why Arkansas has had some of the success that they've had against LSU. But there's no doubt that some of the greatest games that Arkansas has had
home
just in the past 10 years have come against LSU.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skip it. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
If you want to relive some of those moments, some of the greatness that was, we can start with the very beginning one, the one that will always be remembered, at least the first one, of course, which was the Miracle on Markham in 2002.
Jones, back of the shotgun, the line of scrimmage, the 31-yard line of LSU. There's the snap. Jones looking. Jones now throwing to the end zone, and it is complete!
Touchdown!
know what it is about hearing Paul Heal's voice, but
it's just the voice.
I'm telling you, it's like putting honey on your throat, and just, man, if that's just something that's special. But I mean, that is a famous call, one of the better calls that Paul Heal's, and most memorable calls that he would have, of Arkansas going on to beat LSU in 2002 to advance to the SEC title game. Arkansas would end up getting blown out by Georgia, but they at least won the SEC West, and they returned that trip. And again, what a great game, great moment. I think the thing that I'll remember too, Tommy, was the great headline that was made from Jones to Birmingham to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really creative and really cool, and something that I still have the newspaper cut out of it.
Right.
Of having that headline. So definitely a great moment there. And of course, the next one that, of course, you know, you can look at 06, but I'm talking about the ones that Arkansas actually won in this case. The next one, of course, was in 2007.
Here's Flynn. Deep, intercepted. Mataro Richardson, Arkansas wins.
LSU was the number one team in the country. They were going on to the national championship, which at the time, when Arkansas did get the victory, you felt like LSU's chances of winning the national championship or even playing for it were over, because they had two losses. They had lost to Kentucky earlier in the year, and then they just lost to Arkansas. But for whatever reason, in classic Houston Nutt fashion, he would lose to Kentucky, he'd lose to Auburn, he'd lose games that you just scratch your head at and have no idea why he lost. Lost to Alabama earlier in the year. But then to end the year in Baton Rouge, where everything was on the line for LSU to win that game, Arkansas goes in and gets a fantastic victory with a fantastic performance by Peyton Hillis, Felix Jones, and Darren McFadden.
Last game he ever coached at Arkansas.
That's right.
And that was the thing with Nutt. He was always the master motivator. And you're only going to get your team emotionally to peak out so many times in a year, and he knew when he could push those buttons. And I don't know if he was coaching for his job that day, if he wanted to stay, or ended up that was his final game at the University of Arkansas. And he went out with a bang. No question about it.
He certainly did. In fact, when you look back at that game, and of course, you know, you remember the Lou Holtz mark made number five, that in the quote there, you know, that stands out to a lot of people and gives a lot of positive feelings too. But would you feel like that 2017 was the most underachieving Razorback football team of all time? Just seen
07.
They went 8-4 in the regular season. Team that had Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, Peyton Hillis, all as upperclassmen. I know that Casey Dick was your
just
quarterback
you always wonder, what would have happened to this program? What would have happened with Houston Nutt's career? What would have happened with, I mean, to me it was a major crossroads, if they could have just all found a way to make it work.
With Malzahn.
With Malzahn in the Springdale Five, and Mustaine and Williams and all of their family, if all of that could have been peace and harmony, what would have happened over that stretch, including 07?
I think in 07.
Because we saw what was possible in 06.
Yeah, I think
07 could have maybe been the year that, you know, you really could have done some things.
I think in 07 they would have at least played for the national championship.
Possibly.
They beat the best team, in the team that ended up winning the national championship that year, in LSU, in their home stadium. If they would have just had it all working and had it all, you know, where you had Mitch Mustaine, who was
frustrating,
going to be the sophomore that year, and you had Damian Williams and Marcus Monk, and you had those three great running backs, and you had a defense that was returning. I know that you lost Jamal Anderson and Chris Houston, Sam Olajabutu, but you still had some good players coming back. I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Tommy. Yeah. It just makes you think back to what could have been.
So, you've got the 07 win. You don't have on this list the 08 win.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess because, I mean, you could throw that in there because of the Miracle Marker Part 2, but that one just didn't have. I had to pick five because it was a good round number, Tommy.
I'm just saying, should that be in consideration just because you kind of went through a rough year and you weren't going to a bowl game, but then here Bobby Petrino.
First year.
Comes out of nowhere at the end of his first year to win a game against a great LSU team.
Where they were down 30-14 at one point. The Stormback get a 31-30 victory in what was just it was an ugly game. And you had a lot of true freshmen playing the game, like Dennis Johnson and Greg Childs and Jarius Wright. But yeah, I mean, that was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, it was just, again,
it was just
a
capper on a poor season. Well, I mean, the reason I totally get why you'd leave that one out, it was just a capper on a very poor season.
Yeah. And LSU was not that good of a team that year either. They went 7-5 that season. So as far as the standards go for LSU, they weren't that great either. So, I mean, but yeah, it was a memorable game. It was just kind of like, You know, it didn't really have the emphasis and didn't have the greatness that there was but the other games.
It
too.
Signified, and you knew, yeah, this guy here, this coach here,
he knows what he's doing.
He's going to get some things done here.
Yeah, and then you, know, I think I could be wrong.
He's going to get some work done.
I could be wrong, but I think that at that point also, you pretty much knew that Ryan Mallett was coming in the next season, or at least there had been some reports and some talk about it, and you already knew that the great recruiting class he was putting together. So yeah, it just seemed like everything was coming together there the last minute. Who knows? Maybe Chad Morris can have something similar. We'll see. But it'll be a lot more difficult now than it would have been then. That is for sure. So, but yeah, I left the 08 game off. So if anyone's upset at me, that's all right. Just let me know about it. But the next one that, of course, I stand out to me is one that 2010 Arkansas gets the victory and heads on to the Sugar Bowl.
Jefferson, second down in his own end zone, stands in the pocket, flushed in trouble.
Safety.
I see a beanbag at the 1 yard line.
Oh, they're going to give it to him, yeah.
I see the beanbag at the one.
Fumble, too, they say.
Arkansas recovers their fumble of LSU there on their own 1 yard line. They get the ball back. They kneel on the 2 yard line, get the victory, pour some sugar on me. They head on to the Sugar Bowl for the first time in the BCS era, and it was just such an electric game. Of course, Kobe Hamilton had the two big plays. The one right before half, I think, is the one that's going to stand out, because I'll never forget the CBS commentator. I forgot his name, but he says,
Craig Bowlerjack.
There you go. Craig Bowlerjack says, surely Ryan Mallett takes a knee here with 6 seconds to go. Bobby had different ideas. Mm-hmm. Two LSU defenders run into each other. Kobe Hamilton just
at the
takes
end of the
off.
Half there.
Yeah, at the end of the half and gets the much-needed touchdown. And what a great game that was. And I think that I guess Michael and Harrison's the one that brought it up about Nile Davis just run and wearing down LSU and getting 10 yards a pop essentially there to really take that drive out. And, you know, Tommy, as an official, I don't know if you remember this because you talked about the War Memorial game where they had to fix the sky cam. But I remember in this game, too, Nile Davis was slow to get up. He wasn't hurt, but he was just taking his time because he had been worn out. And the officials called an injury timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Petrino looked like he was about to murder someone.
Well, that was not unusual.
No, it wasn't. But I remember that just him going and just telling the ref to get over here and start screaming at him. So I didn't know if as an official you saw it there. And you
I don't remember that.
The official, but no. But anyways, I remember that part of that game too. So that was great game. That ended up Arkansas going to the Sugar Bowl for the first time. And of course, one that may be memorable for all the wrong reasons. Maybe some positive, maybe some good feelings. It was, of course, in 2014, Brett Bielema's first SEC victory.
Back to October of 2012. They're going to run and get that boot. They're going across the field. That's theirs now.
The city's going to come unglued.
175 pounds molded in 24 karat gold. And doesn't it feel good? Well deserved for Arkansas.
Now, I will admit that it was kind of, it was, again, good for all the wrong reasons because Arkansas lost 17 straight SEC games.
Mm-mm-mm.
It was not a pretty time. It was towards the end of the season where Arkansas was just trying to maybe get bowl eligible. But I will say that at that moment, and when Arkansas did win that game and they won it 17-0, shut out LSU, and you saw the team
that
run
across
the
field. That one was in the cold, right?
It was frigid
out there.
It was
like 29 degrees.
Yeah, it was really cold out there.
If you look close, you can see John running across the field with a big fireball bottle just sprinting across the field.
Yeah, well, hopefully it was empty. But yeah, that was for that game and all that. It made people feel good after not feeling good for quite some time.
Relief. I don't know if it's good. I just think it's relief.
I think that was more just getting the monkey off your back. And at the time, too. Because
you were at a point then, you were starting it, and rightfully so, looking back at it, should have had bigger. You were starting to really have some concerns about, is Bielema going to be able to do it here? Is this the right guy? Have we hired the right guy?
Mm-hmm.
Those were all correct instincts, as we found out over the next three seasons ahead of that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and you felt like, too, in that season, I'm sure you remember this, Tommy, that you had so many close games. I mean, you went to Starkville and only lost by a touchdown to the number one team in the country who was undefeated, Mississippi State. You had played a team like Texas A&M, who was pretty good that year. You had that big lead, but then you blew it late. I mean, you had some really close calls, some close matchups where your defense was bringing it. In Alabama, of course, how could you forget? 14-13. That year is the closest you've ever gotten to beating Nick Saban in Alabama, a team that ended up winning the SEC and playing for the national title that year. You were so close to it, and you just felt like, man, when is it finally going to get over the hump? Now, They ended up doing it in a perfect timing of LSU. Fans rushed the field. It was a great feeling at that time because you really felt like, all right, now will things start getting to work. And then when Arkansas beat Ole Miss the next weekend 30-0 in Fayetteville, that made you feel pretty good about Brett Bielema and the rest of the way. But it's all for naught. So like I said, it's just for all the wrong reasons.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
This Wednesday, and it is around the 8 o'clock now. And I think that this is, of course, I know Tom, one of Tommy's favorite segments, because he gets to go on his old man rants, as we like to call him, the get off his lawn type of rants. And, you know, I just like to basically be a millennial and, you know, complain about whatever I got. So, anyways, without further ado, let's get into What's Your Beef Wednesday.
What is wrong with you?
Okay, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger. Swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
That's a man. I could eat ball bears and crap baby.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, so there's going to be a few things that, of course, I'm going to be beefing with, but I think me and Tommy are going to be close to the same page on our theme of what we are going to be beefing with today. And, of course, yesterday being the midterm election.
And this has nothing to do with any candidate or any of the outcomes, anything like that. So just don't worry. You don't have to turn your radio off. You lean one way or the other. Anyone go by a polling location yesterday? I'm sure you did. I voted early, but if you drove by any place, it was easy to find because it was the place that had the 500 signs stuck out in the yard in front of it. And then all the people holding signs and jumping around so you couldn't see to turn in or out of the location. Do candidates really think it's a good idea to have your sign be one of, I don't know, 200 or 300 at a polling location? Like, that's how I'm making. I have no idea who I'm going to go vote. I have no idea. I'll just pick a sign out on my way into the location. I mean, do we really think? I just tweeted out a picture of this yesterday just from one place I was at. I can't even describe or find something that it looks similar to.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good, number one. It looks kind of trashy for just the whole setup. But do candidates really think that's a good idea?
You know, go ahead,
they
Tom.
Say, Tommy, they say, well, why did the fans show up 5 hours early at the Hog Walk to go high-five?
But you know what I'm talking about. You go to a polling location, there's like 500 signs stuck in the yard. There's people jumping around out there. I get the people and being at the polling location. But having 500 signs for all the various candidates.
This isn't
one candidate. This is every candidate for every race in every state, apparently.
I said the same thing yesterday when I was driving and I saw it. I'm going, this is ridiculous.
It's stupid. It's absolutely stupid.
You know what? I almost chalk it up to the fact that a lot of these candidates just don't want to be the one candidate that didn't put their sign out there.
How would you know?
I know, but that's what I'm saying. That's what probably their mindset is. I don't want to be that one sign that's not out there.
I think, what are we going to do with all these leftover signs? We ordered these. I got 400 signs left over. What are we going to do with them now? We'll just put them up at all the polling locations.
Yep, just do it. Hey, we got some extras. Throw them over there.
Where's the Tommy Kraft sign? I'm not seeing that in this picture.
No.
Because we're smart at our campaign. We don't.
That's right. We don't rely on signs.
We don't waste them at polling locations.
We hit the issues. Yes, that's what we get
exactly
people to vote
right
on.
Can we get paid extra for your campaign manager moving forward?
No, because I'd want to win.
That's true.
I would hire you to hold the sign, though.
You can be at the polling location, the person out there dancing with the signs Tommy, I'm with you on that one, man. I don't get it. I never have understood it.
I just don't understand what you think you're accomplishing by doing that.
I don't know. Again, I think
it's that's a good beef, but it was just something yesterday. Then I'm trying to turn left out of this place.
And you can't even see.
And you can't see because they're holding these, you know, it looks like someone trying to call a play on the sideline. They got the one up with Chris Fowler's face on it, a bowl of spaghetti.
And a hamburger and from McDonald's.
Exactly. I mean, it looks like they're trying to call the play from the sideline, one of them deals.
Yeah, no, that's definitely annoying. Because that's the thing is we could spend...
Calls me to have a wreck. That's a great way for me not to vote for you.
We could like spend an entire hour on things we beef with about the midterm election. But I want to kind of piggyback off of that. Because, listen... If you go out and vote, good for you. I love when Americans exercise their rights. I think it's fantastic. I think that that's what's makes this country great. And one of those, of course, is exercising your right to vote. I think it's great. However, I do not understand the amount of people that feel like it is necessary that after you have voted and they give you the little sticker, that you put it right there on your chest or you put it on your face or on your finger or whatever... You take a picture with your phone and you post it up on social media because everybody, and I mean everybody, who voted yesterday had put a picture up of themselves, a little selfie saying, hey, I voted. Yeah. You should too.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Thank you for doing the bare minimum as your service and your civil duty.
Yeah, what do you want, a cookie?
Yeah, it's like, okay, I like the picture. Do you feel satisfied now? Great. I don't get all that. In fact, I even made a sarcastic tweet yesterday, which some people, I think, took more seriously. I was more mocking the people that do it. Because it was the same people that do these pictures and whatnot, where they're essentially saying, hey, get out there and vote. Because there's people that saying, get out there and vote. Get out there and vote. Yeah. But what it was really is that somebody's saying, get out and vote. Unless you vote for someone that I don't vote for, in that case, I want you to stay home and do not vote because I want my person to win.
I want a sticker so I can take a selfie that says, I paid my electric bill today.
Yeah, I'm like, well, okay, cool. Excellent. Hey, do you want me to post a picture every day with a sticker that says, I exercise my right to free speech on the radio show?
Yeah.
No. Listen, again, I'm happy for you. I am glad that you voted. But I do not need to see 100,000 people that are on social media posting the pictures up saying, I voted. Good for you.
Selfies in general are out of control in this country.
I mean, it's not something that you want to make
a habit
of.
You're not that important out there, right?
No. And I mean, it's out of control that way. But the voting thing really just boiled my nuggets because I was sick and tired of seeing that every time I checked Twitter to try to see some type of useful information. That's usually what I use Twitter for. I know that's stupid because you don't get a whole lot of usefulness out of Twitter. Maybe it just makes me mad. But I follow certain people for certain reasons. And the reason I follow them is not because I want to see their stupid pictures with them at the little sticker saying, I voted.
Yeah, good for
Congratulations.
You ever catch someone and they don't realize they're being, you're like at a traffic light or you're sitting in a parking lot and someone in the car next door is trying to take a selfie? You ever watch someone do
yes.
that? All the different
poses. It's a joke.
And then when they move the camera around and
it's an
like,
absolute
what
joke.
Are you doing?
Like,
do you have mental illness? What are you doing?
I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I mean, we can run
I'm not
deeper
a selfie
into this
guy,
too.
Though.
Yeah. I mean, are you sure, Tommy? I haven't seen really any selfies you've taken.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, when was the last time you took a picture of yourself? Have you ever taken a picture of yourself?
I'm sure I would hate to say I've never done it because I'm sure you could go through my timeline like one of these recruits they do and go back 3 or 4 years, you'll probably find one.
Find something
but
about
it's
that.
It's not a daily or weekly or monthly occurrence with me.
Hey,
I'm
just
kind of on the Tyler Wilson plan. I'm a little more incognito. I want to be a little more below the radar.
Man, guys, I don't get it either. But is the world we live in.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
What about this solo one of you at the Masters? It's not a selfie, but
he's got it.
Now the Masters,
he's already pulled him up.
Well, that's fine. That's why I didn't say I've never done it. But I think when you're at somewhere like the Masters,
that's acceptable.
That's acceptable.
But here's the thing:
because I'm sitting in the drive-through, and here, look at me with my ham and cheese sandwich.
Well, here's the thing, Tommy. If I ever see you take a mirror selfie. Where you're going through your workouts and you're trying, you have your shirt off and you're checking out your results, we may fight.
I don't want to make everybody
jealous.
I'll
quit jealous. On the spot.
Yeah. Well, it's that easy, huh?
Do you hear that? Tyler quit on the spot. He says.
What do I have to do?
Yeah, Tommy, go into the bathroom real quick.
That's kind of a benefit for you.
Go Ed Orgeron right now. Tommy, start peeling clothes off.
Tommy's taking off his clothes, running to the bathroom right now to take a selfie.
More pros than cons with that scenario.
I'm trying
sure.
to get that happening, man. Yeah, but it was out of control. Out of control. And also, by the way, a real quick little mini beef if I can
there's one with you and a fish
that. Oh that see those
that's
aren't
another
selfies
one.
Though but those aren't selfies
yeah the fi- it's a picture of me and a fish
yeah I mean it's something that's we're talking about selfies but real quick another little mini beef that I had dealing again with the election is that it was hard to pull the audio. I couldn't find any quality audio, so I can't play it, so I apologize. But Will Muschamp, South Carolina head coach, was asked by one of the reporters of, have you talked to your players about the election that was coming up? And this was on Monday. And he kind of just didn't even answer. And he's like, the guy goes, well, do you even know that the election's coming up tomorrow? And he's like, yeah, I know now. My focus is on Florida. That's what his response was, the head coach. And there was all these sports media journalists like, I can't believe this. Oh. How dare somebody like Will Muschamp, a leader of men, not talk to his players about exercising their right to vote? Man! Listen, as a head football coach who's getting paid millions of dollars.
Wouldn't pompous at all.
He does not need to do, this is not something that you need to hold against him. These are 18-year-old kids, 18-year-old men. If they want to vote, they can vote. And if he wants to talk about them, he can. But when he's sitting there in the press conference and talking about Florida, if he doesn't sit there and say, I've sat down with my players and talk about voting, that does not make him a bad human being for not doing so. But this pompous deal when stuff like this happens just frustrates the dog out of me. So I had to throw that one in there too, Tyler.
Well, I think also if he comes out and says, hey, guys, and everybody's going, you're pretty outspoken about voting and your political stances and all that stuff. Now we're brainwashing the kids mm-hmm. about what direction we feel they should go. So you can't win. Yeah. You can't.
So what did John L. tell you about the 2012 elections? I'm really fascinated. I want to know.
Yeah, no. And the other guy didn't have anything to say about it either. So
yeah,
in the 2010 midterms, he didn't.
Yeah,
didn't give you any advice.
I'm sure everyone's better for it. But we had to throw that in for sure.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.